You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Look what I've done. I've just pressed record. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Gosh, man, there's no preamble here, you know. Now, I was on a podcast the other day and this chap said, well, this is what we're going to do with the podcast and we're going to ask you these. I was like, come on, let's just do it. Kirk Cooper, yeah. Welcome to Hooked on Startups. That's your cue to say.
That sounds awesome.
That's fine. Is there a delay? Is there have you ever seen that British comedian who plays with his microphone as if there's something wrong with the phone? It's absolutely hilarious to watch. Although it was sort of vaudeville 500 years ago.
No, that would be funny. It'd be especially in this day and age where everything's moving to like Zoom and online, where you could really play with the person on the other side.
You could have hours of fun pretending that there's something wrong with your microphone. I know. And people wouldn't be any the wiser. So tell me, as an ex-school teacher, if someone was doing that to you, would you throw the board? You didn't have sort of board erasers. Are you still allowed to throw things at pupils if they misbehave?
Unfortunately not. Is that
why you left?
No, that's not the reason why. But I mean, it is different. I mean, it's a heck of a lot different than when I was a student compared to when I was a teacher, for sure. It's, I mean, night and day, even from what I could tell, it's very political and very, their way or the highway. You got to play by their rules, even if what you feel you're doing is completely right and it's in the best interest of the student.
Students that demand this. Is it the students that say it's my way or the highway?
Well, some of them, unfortunately, they've been ingrained with that mentality. They've been brought up, with parents that allow them to treat people that way. Unfortunately, not all of them, but a decent chunk of kids are like that make the industry sour and unenjoyable in some respects. So it's not easy anymore.
No, I suppose it is. I remember, I remember when I was at school, we had blackboards with chalk and the board erasers would be regularly flying from the front to the back of the class to sort of wake up Johnny who'd fallen asleep. And we had inkwells where you would literally dip your pen into the inkwell. Showing my age? So all of this is gone. And that's why the fabric of society is breaking down, because people that don't have to work to use ink in their pens. I think that's really where it all stemmed.
I agree 100%. Yeah, and you're seeing it now. I mean, every little mom and pop shop, small businesses, help wanted. And because people are making more money sitting at home right now, well, they're not going out and filling those positions that are paying them 14 or 15 bucks an hour.
And do you know where they're making money? E-commerce.
Yeah, we're, yeah. Oh, I was saying, well, those people, yeah. No, e-commerce is, yeah, it's huge.
That's where people are making. So you tell me a little bit about your business. I mean, your what you do in the e-com world.
Yeah. So what I do now, I mean, it all stemmed from a curiosity. It stemmed from, hey, I want to make some extra money on top of being a teacher and coach. I wanted to find a way to not have to leave the house and work another job. So it really turned in just to kind of, burning the candle at, both ends at night, staying up late, teaching myself and really just kind of honing, my ability to do proper product research and product listings and deliver a product and care for the customers. And then eventually it got to the point where I was working all the time. I literally gave myself another job and an employment.
Teaching became a side hustle.
Yeah. Right. And I was like, I've got to be able to step back. And so that's where I started training a team. I spent 3 months of, multiple nights a week getting online, just like this, sharing my screen and teaching this team that I eventually, agreed to work with. And it was 6 guys, taught them all of my ins and outs. And then eventually I backed off, still logged on, still was on the screen, but now they were running the business, my store. And I was there just to, yes, that looks good. Or, hey, try this. And they were asking questions and got to the point where now I didn't have to work. The store was running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, instead of 4 hours at night. Yes. Boom, light bulb. Like I was making money passively. I was making money as I slept and they were making money by being employed and running the store, but I was doing more revenue, more net than I could ever have imagined. So that's where I was like, hey, what's our ability to find other individuals that are coming out of the university level that have this makeup, this background, this is what they studied and would be eager and hungry to get into this industry and grow with us as we grow our team. And now we can help other people do this passively and make money in the e-commerce space without knowing a lick about product research, product listings, or taking the time to run the business. Second, and, third, fourth, fifth stream of income.
I mean, fascinating stuff. Now, e-commerce is a word that people hear a lot, but I think it would be really useful if you could just take us through some baby steps as to what is e-commerce? We know what it is, but what does it mean? Yeah. In other words, how do you begin to start trading? What is the infrastructure? What are the platforms? How do you make money? Where do you start?
Yeah. So, I mean, first and foremost, we're taking advantage of 2021, rolling into 2022. It's just that this is where people are finding themselves buying their product. And even more so with COVID, right, that came through, it forced those people that of the older generation that weren't as comfortable with online shopping, it forced them to become comfortable and to investigate it and learn. And many of those, you look at the statistics now, hasn't dropped off because they're continuing it because they found the comfort and the ease to shop online. So all we're doing is...
Are you working with a large outfit like Amazon, or is this a separate website? Do you go through their store, or do you have your own sort of destination that you're trying to drive people to?
So we do it all. So that's kind of where it is now. Amazon, you don't need to run and market in a lot of cases because people are already using that platform. They know it. They get on one clicks, you know, purchases. So if you leverage their platform and put your products on it, you know, it puts you on a podium. It puts you on a scale. Same thing with Walmart.com.
Yeah.
But places like Shopify gives you a kind of a kit. You're able to go in and build out your own domain, your own product, but now you got to run traffic to it because people don't know to go find Kirk, you know, Kirk's ecomgadgets.com, right? We've got to drive them to it. Amazon, they already know to go to Amazon. So that's why we partner and leverage their platform to run these businesses off of it. We team up with them, use their marketability, and then we bring our ability to grow, scale, and launch product, and we marry them together to run successful business hand in hand.
Yes. Okay. So that's a structure that Amazon has, but again, the whole thing is it's a huge universe. There are a lot of people selling gadgets and widgets, and there must be some way of making sure that when people look for stuff, how do they choose your stuff rather than the guy next door?
Yeah. So depending upon the model, the most popular model that we run, and this is really demanded by the client, the business owner, more than anything, is they want to drop ship. That's what most people want to do because they don't have to buy thousands of units of inventory and just hope that once it gets into the Amazon warehouse, that they don't have some competition just rush in and now they have to compete selling their product. They like, hey, we list these products. We don't have them yet, but when we sell them, we'll go over and buy them and have them shipped to the customer. So for something like that, what makes us and kind of sets us apart is that we're running these stores 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, opposed to the old me, Kirk Cooper. When I was doing this, I was just, you know, 10 p.m. till 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And then I'd be in athletic weight training at 7 a.m. or teaching health class by 9. And I wasn't able to work on that side of my business. So you can't optimize when you need to optimize. You don't get the notifications and then act on them when you need to act on them. So that allows you to grow and sprout and develop and allow yourself to be more visible, to align with Amazon's algorithms, which in turn, the algorithms give you what we call the buy box. The buy box, for those of us that don't know, is if you or I were to go on and we wanted to buy a new lawnmower and we found the lawnmower, there could be 10, 15 other people selling that same lawnmower. Say it's a big brand and we've sourced it. We know where to get it. We have a good price for it. We know we can sell it for this. Well, if there's 10 to 15 other people selling it, but we show Amazon that we're responsive, that we're selling, you know, higher volume and we're having more successful end conversion rates, they're going to give us more time as the buy now, because somebody has to have that buy now button.
Got it.
So if it's you, the other people are still listed sellers, but they're going to have to earn it some way, shape, or form. And being in the trenches and running your business.
You look at Amazon and you buy something and it says also available from other sellers. And then there's a list of a whole bunch of people that you've never heard of and probably don't do business with because, you know, you don't trust them necessarily. So those are the people that are not able to fulfill the requirements of what Amazon's looking for in terms of their partners.
Yeah, they just haven't got their store to rank yet to even be given the chance. So, you know, when something happens, you don't get the 24 hours. Like, you're not going to have the buy box for the full day, but you might earned it for 18 hours and the prime 18 hours. And then they'll give someone else a chance for about an hour, another person for an hour. And if you do well within that time, yeah, you start to rank higher. And if this person slips, then all of a sudden you slide into the majority leader.
And then again, so there are all sorts of, it's a world within a world. You saw the Amazon store, as it were, because although it appears, you know, because we're mentioning words like drop shipping and, you know, algorithms. And another thing I really want to talk about is the review process. So, you know, you see some products which have tens of thousands of reviews. And, you know, those, I think, are one of the key buying factors or key factors that determine, you know, what people buy and how comfortable they are buying. But to get that sort of number of views on your those sort of responses for your lawnmower, you know, is that a separate industry in its own right?
It is. You're going to find that the reviews on a product become more important when you're trying to sell your own branded products, your own private label based products, because it's going to start from scratch and have zero. When we're selling this lawnmower, for instance, when we're drop shipping, we're selling brand name products. And that's why there's multiple people selling them. So the product isn't as important as your seller position and who you are as a seller, because these people already know that brand. They know, hey, I got to find this brand of this, and you're just one of many sellers. They're looking for the product, and then you're going to be the person to fulfill it when you're ranking your store appropriately.
So where did you start? So let's go back again. So where did you get the idea from you wanted to do this particular business? And the second part of the question is, how did you begin? Did you begin drop shipping, or did you, where was your the first step that you took?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the industry itself was attractive simply because, boom, I could do this from home. Like, everybody goes to bed, I can go to my computer, pull in real tight, and just grind away and not feel like I had to leave the house and separate myself from, you know, from my family and all and all that. So it just kind of lent that if I ever needed to get up and be helpful, or, you know, be present, I was
see that. That's one of the huge drivers of these types of businesses, that you have control. You don't have to dance to someone else's tune. You can, you know, theoretically you can work there. So that's, I can see that's the motivation. That's a powerful motivation.
Yeah. And then as far as, you know, really getting the start, I mean, I found some kind of one-off pretty helpful YouTube videos that actually kind of helped me as far as how to get my gear straight on proper product research. I got into the private label industry, so to speak, initially. And that was me trying to find product overseas, quality products, but product that I could source at a, you know, lower price point and brand it, label it, create a brand and a label around it, and then market it to sell it. So things like silicone baking mats.
There was someone else I was interviewing who, again, started in a similar business, but the product research that they did led him towards, I think it was sex toys. Because it is an underserved market, and there's all sorts of fun and games and puns you can have with this. But, you know, the research was, there's obviously demand. It was underserved. In other words, you've only got like one or two people providing these products, and he did incredibly well. And, so when you talk about product research, does that mean, you know, God, what am I? Are you sitting there scratching your head thinking, what am I going to sell? I've seen this video that shows me how I set up. It's a bit like when you write a book. Okay, I can go to Kindle Publishing or whatever. I know how to get it published, but hang on, what am I going to write? Is it the same sort of question you ask, what am I going to sell?
Oh, absolutely. And really, when you're starting and you don't have a ton of capital and funds to invest in all the neat softwares that are out there now that kind of help scrape different platforms, you're literally kind of doing reverse engineering it. You're going on to the platform you want to sell on, Amazon, and you're looking to see, okay, there's this. Ooh, there's a gap here. What about a product? And then you go see, does this product exist? And you try to fill the need of a vacant, you know, space, or you find a product that you feel you can improve upon, something that you'll bring in and you'll essentially take over that, you know, that niche, right? You're going to improve upon a product that's already out there. So it's kind of how I found myself getting into the space, was reverse engineering it, looking for stuff that I'd be filling a void, and then tried to fill it. And then on top of that,
and again, we see on Amazon sort of various different shops where people specialize in certain things. Again,
yeah.
So your business, is it specific to a particular type of product, or are you really just continually looking for gaps in any market or any type of, you know, consumer product?
Yeah, we want to leave our, you know, our minds open. So it's like home goods, just very just vague. Like you could throw, if the product is going to have the ability to make you money, we want to be able to include it. We're not just women's or hair care or anything like that. It's open. We want to be able to sell anything and everything under the sun to make money.
And then, so your next step, I mean, obviously your background as a coach probably came into this at some point where you don't want to play the game necessarily, but if you can step back and teach others to do it, so your company, Ecom Automation Gurus, did that come about where you're saying, hang on a second, I can do this now, but as you said before, I don't want to do the 24-hour thing. I can teach people how to do this. So tell me about how your current company and how that emerged from these learnings.
Yeah, so it turned into just being able to delegate. You know, I want the business to work for me. I didn't necessarily want to continue to work for the business. And what I mean by that, because it kind of sound wrong, is that I just don't want to find myself in the trenches. Because in the e-com space, you are having to fulfill orders 7 days a week. You can't necessarily take a day off because you got to get the product in motion to get it to your customer.
So it's Saturdays and Sundays. Is that something that you discovered early on, or is that something that you knew was going to happen? Was it a bit of a hang on, this isn't too good to be true, because lots of hard work is involved because I can't go to bed ever.
Yeah, it wasn't something I got in thinking about it. You learn so much as you go, but I was like, whoa, I'm still teaching and coaching, and then I'm running the store at night. Like there wasn't nights where it's like, I'm dead tired from, you know, track practice or whatever, and I just want to go to bed. I had to pull myself up and go, okay, I got all these orders to fulfill. I got to do some more research because I want to add more product because I want to continue to grow and scale. There's always something to be done. So that's where I was like, I'm going to hire, train, I'm going to build this out, and I'm going to move myself away from it completely and allow my team to run the day-to-day operations so that I can work on it all day, every day.
And let's explore some of the other issues that you may have stumbled across. So first of all, it sounds great. Okay, you've got a business that you can run from home, very little capital involved. In other words, if you're offering products, you don't have to have inventory because you can get the customer and then you simply buy the product and then ship it on a as needed basis. So hopefully there's far lower cash flow. But what sort of problems do you start encountering? So someone receives their lawnmower and decides that it doesn't work and they want to return it because Amazon has a very, you know, benevolent returns policy. How do you end up, you know, what sort of problems can that cause in a drop shipping environment?
Yeah. So nothing too crazy. I mean, they're going to go through the same process of, you know, submitting or requesting a refund, return. We're going to get the shipping label from our supplier. So it's nothing out of our pocket. We'll provide it to them. And once they have it, they can slap it on the box, get it shipped back in. Once the refund is initiated back to us and we know the product was in good, acceptable, returnable order, then we then issue the refund back to the customer. So it, you know, comes around full circle. But you do run into when you're drop shipping and you're not fulfilling your own product and you don't have your own warehouse and you are really system checking your product, that always use this as an example is FedEx is going to deliver these products. And there was a fridge, I think it was over 50 pounds, like a mini fridge. Yeah. And FedEx had a policy where they can't move it up past like three stairs. They had like a 4 or 5 stair stoop. They left it at the bottom. This customer was so irate and upset. They left the business owner, our client, a poor review.
Yeah.
And it was FedEx's policy, not the store owner, but Amazon wouldn't remove it and wouldn't pull it down. So it had a small effect on the image of their business. If somebody wanted to take the time to read the reviews, hopefully people would see through and go, that's silly. But it affected their star rating. So stuff like that can, you know, there's 5 moving pieces in drop shipping. So you got to play the pieces.
Are you still actively involved in drop shipping, or is that part of a portfolio? In other words, have you learned certain things from what you've been doing where it's an area that you don't want to go back to, or that you would recommend that people start somewhere else?
Yeah, no, we've learned and evolved so much that there's always times that you're going to have to pivot and adjust. There's things that, you know, curveballs are going to be thrown, but it's about sitting on them and driving them. You know, there's a lot of opportunity still. I mean, but we've expanded into, again, private label, wholesaling product from brand owners where you're still getting inventory. leveraging that on Amazon, on Walmart, eBay, Shopify, Facebook Marketplace, Etsy. There's so many different platforms that you can get on and work a niche, yes, or a very open general store. That's how we diversify for, yes, our clients who are the business owners of each of these stores. If we start crushing it here, all right, let's look to diversify and get onto this platform too. So now you have multiple streams and you're hitting the markets of people that are looking at this platform versus this platform. So you're able, yes, to really scoop up the loose balls, if you will.
So your business is now primarily consulting,
exactly,
business. And again, exactly, is it not more to, and why would, I know that's obviously there's a bit of background that you have there, but is it not more compelling to actually build a business with customers and with, you know, that momentum? Is there more value in that, or is it easier for you to scale your operation by consulting to other people that are embarking on this?
Yeah, great question. So it's set around having win-win-win, scenario where they're winning because they can now don't have to learn the systems and they can diversify into an additional stream of income. We can win because at the end of the day, to run a business, you need the capital within the business to grow and scale it. So we would need hundreds and millions of dollars if we wanted to run the volume that we're doing, because we have all these storefronts and we're able to operate them and the business owner brings the capital. They make most of the money, but because we have so many different stores that we're operating, the percentage that we make on each of them becomes very, very lucrative and, yeah, worth our while to, one, help people. That comes from the teaching and coaching background of mine. Is I'm still a teacher, I'm still a coach in this respect, that I'm teaching and coaching and helping people evolve and fill a void that many people have. And that's additional income so that they don't have to be slaves to their lives and work all the time. We want, yes, people to enjoy their family.
And for these people, they, do you not have a similar sort of problem where once you embark on this e-com process that you find yourself, they will find themselves in the same position that you found yourself in to start with, which is, and there's just not enough hours in the day. Are there ways of mitigating that or spreading that across different operators? So some operators do different shifts depending on where they are sort of geographically.
Exactly. So the way we are operating is that we have multiple shifts and we're working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So they'll work their 8-hour shift. And then when that shift ends, the individuals that are coming into our office, we have seven different office buildings. They come in, the people that are taking over at that station are still working on that same file.
Yeah.
So they're incentivized to continue to grind because at the end of the month, they're paid on a percentage of the success.
Yes.
So it's not like they're just handing it off and then whoever willy-nilly gets it and doesn't continue to grind. So anyone and everyone, they're an extension. They're handing a baton to each of their team through every shift so that they continue to crush it.
And this is something that you, geographically, can you diversify the people that you need to run your business outside of the US? Can you bring in lower cost teams in other countries, for example, to do that?
Exactly what we do. It's exactly what we do. Bright, brilliant individuals, but based on their cost of living and what it takes to feel successful.
Philippines is a great location, India. Yeah. When I was, a few years ago, I used to run, very large teams of Indian outsourcing businesses. So,
yeah, you got it.
What you're doing, I suppose, is you're providing scale, because for someone to come into the business, what they want to avoid is all of the pitfalls that you suffered when you started, and to have a solution. So, in other words, I want to. What do these people bring, though? So, if you're effectively outsourcing the labor or the customer correspondence or the fulfillment, what do the people that work with you, what do they bring?
Yeah, they're bringing the LLC. They're bringing the business. They're the business owner and we're just a contractor consultant. So they're bringing the capital, lines of credit. So if there's, we're using their lines of credit to purchase the product, they're getting a bunch of cash back and points on those cards. That's cool. But then we're able to run the business and scale it to the magnitude that they have available capital to do it. So we have stores that do, $1,000 in revenue a month. We have stores that do consistently 200,000, 300,000, 400,000. And November and December, we have stores that do $500,000 to $900,000 in revenue a month. So it just depends on if they have the oomph on a card or 10 cards that we can run the business. And then as they get paid from Amazon, they pay their cards off and,
yes. Yeah. So I guess, so what you're doing is far more valuable than purely the coaching side, because if you're providing infrastructure that enables people to leverage capital. So people are coming to you with capital, effectively, or access to capital.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're, do they then take a step back and just say, look, here's, this is what we want to do. Are you involved in the design of the stores or the selection of the products, or is that something that you leave that to the clients?
Yeah, great question. In many cases, most of it is done for you, where we want to be the ones that decide, because we're going to go in and because we want to make money, because we're going to make a percentage of the money. So we want it to be as profitable as possible. We do have a few services where the client is a little more, you know, involved and inclined into the product. So it's just different kind of setup. But 95% of our business is us making those decisions and running it and then benefiting them. We want it to be hands off for them, so that it's just cash flow. So that it's like, wow, I've got this team making me this money.
And if you had more capital available to you as a business, would you then evolve your business and really cut out that? Because that money is going to be quite expensive. You know, if you're leveraging other people's capital, then that's equity funding. It comes at a very high price, because it's not just the cost of capital, because they want a big piece of the profit that you make on each deal. Is it one of your strategies, perhaps, as you grow, to disconnect from this distributed capital source, tap into something much, you know, simpler and bigger that you can then use yourself, where you maximize the returns?
Yeah, it's definitely crossed my mind and really just my management group are, you know, all of our minds, but we get a joy out of helping people while doing it. I make plenty of money and get plenty of happiness and success out of this that it's enjoyable to provide what we provide for people. I think it would be less enjoyable if I eventually made it less, you know, client based, and we weren't serving a client and I was just doing it for myself. Yep. Because then who do you celebrate all those wins with? I'm an ex-athlete. I like celebrating like the winning aspect of anything in life.
Yes. That's very interesting. And again, but I'm sure that for every sort of 10 great clients, you probably have one who's a little bit tricky, as it were. So, you know, there's that challenge. But is scalability not an issue, or is scalability an issue with you? Because again, trying to deal with multiple clients, that you have to have multiple people to deal with that. So you're expanding your infrastructure to deal with that capital.
Oh, no, that's great. Yeah. So at this stage of the game, no, I've got just shy of 500 members on our team. So as far as virtual assistants go that have gone through our training and are active and working, and then we've got 400 and some odd stores that we run. I mean, at this stage of the game, we could run 1500 stores with the amount of people we have. So if it got to the point where it's like, hey, we're growing, scaling, things are great, we just continue to hire into those management positions and continue to build out our VAs and our infrastructure, our buildings and systems in time. You know, there's no rush to it yet, knowing that eventually we'll find a happy spot where we don't need to constantly bring in new clients and we just manage all of them. And we're just, you know, filtering off of their, you know, store success.
And can a client come to you and say, I know nothing about e-commerce, I want to build a store, I know nothing about the stores, but I do have credit or I do have capital. Is that a client that you want to work with, or where really they have no interest or ability to be involved on a day-to-day basis? Literally, they just want to see, you know, the report and the revenue share at the end of the month.
That's the best client, because they don't come in. It's kind of like you're hearing people say that MBAs are more and more less desirable in these higher tiered businesses, because they want to teach you what they know instead of you coming in with this pre-taught. So we want these people to come in as investors, current business owners, people that want to put their money to work, and they aren't coming in to learn a new skill or tell us they want us to do this, this, or this. Let us do what we do best, and we're going to have the absolute best relationship possible between that client and our, you know, our service. So that is the person we want that you just described.
And can you find yourself where you're merging people into one store? Because rather than having, say, 50 stores trying to compete to do the same product, where one person wins, are you able to bring people together in some form of syndication, so that if you've got a large volume store, you could actually have 20 people behind that are funding that cash flow?
We have similar situations like that currently, where they actually create their partnership and they come together to bring the capital and the funding. And then again, they just come to us as the contractor, the consultants. So we have some superstores, is what I call them, because they're literally bringing in all this capital. And then we also find diversifying situations like that is helpful too. So you're not just stuck on just Amazon. Hey, let's put you onto Walmart. Let's leverage Facebook Marketplace. Let's leverage, building out a private domain on Shopify. So we'll spread it out and then piece each of those together.
That is, I was going to say, that's one of the other risks, is that everything, if you build your entire business based on Amazon, I'm sure that nothing would happen. But should they change the algorithm or the rules of engagement, that could affect your business. So you've got that diversified strategy in place.
And absolutely. Because Amazon throws curveballs. They're throwing them all the time. So that's why we do it, is you just don't know, is there going to be a day that more difficult than just the standard curveball?
Yes. And what feedback do you get? So as you get larger and become more important, is there a stage where you become of interest to these types of distribution networks like Amazon, where they start providing you with incentives to stay with them or to grow your business because you become an important cog in their machinery?
Yeah. So we have reps that work, within the Amazon space that we're able to lean on and kind of elbow when we, need some additional support. I've got some people on the back end that work inside, their support facilities that can pull up different, back end notes and really things that the average person doesn't have access to. Because we've grown within the space, we've been able to locate, meet, network with these people. So yeah, I mean, it's that they realize that in the dropshipping sense, Amazon's making 15% of every sale. They don't even care what our margin is. If you sell a $100 item, they make 15 bucks. So we've got to make sure that we're selling and sourcing the product for better than 85.
Absolutely.
So they're making their money just by being the platform and not even touching the product. So they know, when you have a big player in the game, that they want to work with you and take care of you.
And what are the things that have come out of the woodwork that really surprised you, both positively and negatively, because this business has taken on a completely different size and scale to the business that you started?
Yeah.
How many, was it 3 years ago, something like that? Or,
well, I started the whole thing 2013, but the last 3 years have been where it's been scale mode and really running EAG. Yeah.
What things have really surprised you where you thought, God, I never thought that would happen, or hang on, that's really, that's wrong.
Yeah. Algorithms, unfortunately, because you're not working with an actual person on the other side of Amazon, something will red flag or trigger and they'll pause a store, or suspend a store. And we're looking at it and we're like, why? Nothing is out of line that this should be happening. And then to get the attention of somebody on the other side, Amazon, to effectively research it and look at it and then reinstate a store in a timely manner, that's what drives us up a wall, is because we're working with computers more than we're working with people, in that sense, on their side of things. So that's what's really, as we've grown and scaled, we have to explain this kind of before a client signs our paperwork and says, hey, they're coming on. We got to say, hey, one, we're not Amazon. We do consider ourselves experts in the space and being able to be successful on their platform. But tomorrow, Amazon could completely hit a light switch and our hands are tied because we're not Amazon. So we need you to know that and understand that it's a business. There's risks. The business could crumble overnight because of a curveball that they throw us. So that's why a seasoned investor is a good client for us, because they understand that in really any
They sort of roll with the punches.
Yeah.
I just wanted to move the metaphor away from like field sports to sort of boxing.
There you go. I like it.
But presumably your business now is in a position where, as you said at the beginning, you wanted to work on the business and not in the business. So, and I completely understand that, because, if you're an employee of your own business, then you run out of time. Time becomes your enemy. But now you've got something that is very scalable, because you can add more people at the subcontracted level. You can bring any number of different clients on, and Amazon is big enough to swallow up probably anything that you could generate in a reasonable time.
Yeah. Time freedom is literally what I'm fully after, is time freedom more than anything.
I think that's one of the things that really is most at risk with any entrepreneur, is this fact that they do feel that they have to operate at the engineering level rather than at the planning level. What advice would you give people that are in that sort of position? How are they going to spot if they're suffering from you know, being subsumed by the business rather than being in control of it.
Yeah. So you actually broke out. I went silent in there probably about 15 seconds ago there.
Oh, that was, I wouldn't bother. I didn't say anything interesting.
I was just rambling on.
Now, what I was saying is that one of the biggest challenges to any business owner is to try and avoid getting sucked into running the business.
Yeah.
What advice would you give people to spot the signs of, you know, becoming a slave to your own business, and how do you get out of that? How do you, you know, because you're a coach, so you need a certain mindset. You see sports people every day that, you know, where the mental challenge is just as great as the physical challenge. So what learnings did you bring that you can apply to, you know, other people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it was more, I needed to be involved in the process because I wanted to become the expert in the space. There's a lot of opportunities out there where people just come in and they just are the face and they facilitate certain things. Like, I wanted to become the expert first. I wanted to be able to teach, grow, and expand it so that I understand the industry. I understand what we're going through, and I can still be a vital component to, you know, to the growth of EAG.
Yes.
But I also wanted to make sure that without going too far down the rabbit hole, that I was able to hire management roles and delegate certain areas, because in many cases, they are better at me in certain aspects of this game. You know, I've got people that are better with working with clients one-on-one. You know, I got to the point where I was the customer service for a while, and I was like, no, because then people feel like they need 100% access to me. And by no means am I Jeff Bezos, but
yes,
people don't get a call and talk to Jeff Bezos, you know, when they have an issue with Amazon or they have a question, comment, concern. So I wanted to.
I do have his number roles. if you need it, incidentally.
I will.
I'll send it to you private message, you know, in case you have any.
Thank you. He might be able to pull a few strings here. So,
and if he doesn't answer, just, you know, I got Bill Gates' number as well, so you can get him to leave a message, you know. So, it's nothing, you know.
Perfect. Yeah, no big deal.
But I think it might be time, Kirk Cooper of EAG, to switch gears.
Let's do it.
To my infamous Hooked on Startups quickfire questionnaire. That was the sound of the rattling of paper here. Because I have to write them down. So are you ready for this? All of your sporting background and training, today is the pinnacle. Today is the moment. Okay, question number one. What is your favorite word?
Oh, sweet. I say the word sweet all the time. I don't it just fills sentences. Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it is. Fabulous. Yeah. Question number two. What is your least favorite word?
Can't. Can't. It's cliche as that is.
Many people say that. It's funny.
Yeah.
Question three, what are you most excited about right now?
Helping people, changing lives, giving people an opportunity to experience a lot of the things that I get to experience. And that's the time freedom, that they don't have to be slaves of, you know, having to work all the time for their money. We want to help people.
And that really does make a difference. I can tell you that does.
That is
incredibly helpful. Number four, what turns you off right now?
People that I used to engage with on a regular basis that I call, you know, good friends, who now that I've created success and really kind of got a snowball effect going and really seen a lot of success, that no longer speak to me. And it's unfortunate, because you just think that they're either jealous individuals or whatnot. But I had a lot of people I thought were really great friends, and nothing's happened other than I've evolved and there must be some jealousy there. And it's unfortunate, because I miss some of those relationships.
Yeah, I can imagine. But it's funny. It makes you sort of scratch your head and sort of wonder a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a subject all its own. Question five, moving swiftly on. What sound or noise do you love?
So I'm an outdoorsman. I love this time of year, September, being in the mountains and hearing elk bugle. It's the coolest thing in the world, is having elk all around you and they're just bugling and talking. It's nothing like it. It's cool.
Fantastic. And what sound or noise do you hate?
I guess like crying. And it's not that you hate it. It's you wonder, unless it's your own children and they're just being little brats, you wonder what's causing somebody so much pain. You know, you hate it and you wish you could help somebody, and hate seeing people sad. So that kind of that crying and sopping.
Question seven, and you may plead the Fifth Amendment on this. What is your favorite curse word?
F word.
In all of its majesty.
Yeah, all of it. You just emphasize it. It just seems to make things better when you just let it go.
Yes. I can see the cathartic nature of it. Question number eight. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I wanted to be a professional athlete, you know, with everything. I mean, one time I wanted to be football and an NFL player or Major League Baseball. And I wanted to be a professional athlete.
Fantastic. And what profession would you not like to attempt?
I wouldn't want to be the president. Now seeing these last two terms, they take a lot of heat, good, bad, and ugly. I would not want to be the president, unfortunately.
No, that's right. I mean, one has to sort of, you know, you need broad shoulders to do something like that and rather thick skin. So So my final question, Kirk, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, when you show up, it'd be just short and brief, you know, Kirk, you've done me proud. And your family's in good hands.
Bars open.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, bars open. There you go. Yeah, just to kind of reassure that everything I've done and put my best foot forward has made a difference in people's lives and that, yeah, my family will be taken care of for years to come.
That is fantastic. Well, Kirk, it's been such a pleasure having you on. And how do people find out more about you and EAG and how to you know, get involved in something that sounds incredibly exciting? And you know, where's the best place?
Yeah. So our website is ecomautomationgurus.com, or you can connect and find me on Facebook. Just search Kirk Cooper and connect with me. But the website there, you can book calls, you know, it's all free strategy sessions. We love just geeking out and talking about opportunities. And if it's a great fit, let's do business. If it's not, no hard feelings. We're here to help people. And hopefully we can point you in the direction of some other opportunities that we're aware of and can help change lives.
That's fantastic. Well, it's been such a pleasure having you on. Wonderful to meet you. And I can't wait to follow your progress and stay in touch.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.